You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. We've been getting a lot of reviews, a lot of support, and we're starting to get to regain our focus. Not regain, but we're starting to gain our focus, right, Carlos?
Yeah, no, it's real nice, man. Just planning for the future. Our vibe is getting stronger. We've had some people reach out to us for shows. We've been reaching out to a few other folks also, and the content coming is going to be hot. Like you see it on Instagram, straight fire.
Yep. And it's crazy too, because we've kind of planned it to be a certain way, but things happen in different ways where episodes start to like combine together to a whole big story. And that's exactly what I envisioned, but I didn't know how to put it on paper. So it's actually falling together pretty nicely. And for those of you guys who have been listening to us since day one, we really appreciate it. And we want you guys to start taking a look at that. Before we go into this episode, I wanted to bring up that we're going to start having merch for sale. So be on the lookout at our website, www.laverdadltd.com. And we're going to start having all of our stuff out there so that you guys could get fresh La Verdad t-shirts. So give it about like a week or two and we'll have that completely set up.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you actually, Christian, I had a few people hit me up today asking for shirts.
Nice.
And so we know the truth is it's hot merchandise. It looks nice, and you know, hopefully y'all will like it too, those who are new to La Verdad.
For sure, but, man. So for today's episode, we had Carlos take a trip down up to Detroit, and how was it, man? How was that trip to Detroit, man?
Man, I love Detroit. Don't believe all the negative hype.
Yeah.
Like I know that there's a lot that Detroit needs to work on, but there's a lot of work being done. I think that sometimes people take so much time focusing on the negative that they forget to give props whenever something positive is going on, or whenever, you know, there's just good work and a lot of great people in the city. And so I got in Friday night. I had a late dinner at a great little restaurant in Southwest Detroit called Mi Pueblo. It wasn't actually that little.
What type of food?
It was Mexican food. And, you know, Southwest Detroit, another little nickname is Mexican Town. And so it was, and we talk about that in the actual episode. So that's going to be nice. A lot of people don't know that there's actually a real, a pretty sizable Mexican community in Detroit, and that they've been there for decades and decades and just super established. And it's just kind of another way that Latinos are just everywhere, man.
Yeah. And that kind of goes with the interview that you guys did. And I wanted to highlight a couple of key points in the interview that I want you guys, the listeners, to kind of take away from this interview. So Carlos went up there to Detroit, Michigan. He was able to meet up with a big artist that's coming up in the area. He's been around for a couple of years already, and has a different twist, man. Like when I was listening to the interview, I was able to identify with him and also kind of like see a whole different genre of music, you know, and it's kind of unique because he identifies with the, you know, native community as well as the Latino community and blends it together and brings this new flavor to the game. So one of the key things that did that I kind of saw from the interview and it stood out to me was that he's community based. So, you know, he went to school somewhere else outside of his community, but instead of going and pursuing like a corporate America kind of thing, he went back to the community and is building it back up. So since you brought up that the Mexican community there in Detroit has been around for generations, he also brings that up in the podcast. So it was unique. It was something that I didn't expect. And it shows you that there's things happening up in Detroit. Like you said, don't believe the hype, right? And, you know, he talks a little bit more of his native background. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, no, for sure. He does identify as Chicano and Ojibwe. And what I loved is that he sets the tone with that from the very beginning. So it's present in the forefront. And I think that's real powerful, right? Owning up your identity.
Yeah.
We use the name Latino. If you ever had a conversation or kind of dig into it long enough, we know that's not really a perfect term. There's a lot that we can criticize. Mm-hmm. So this whole community, whatever we end up calling ourselves in the long run, it's made up of so many people, indigenous African cultures, yep. You know, European, Arabic. And in this case, he's a very strong advocate for that, his roots. But he doesn't only read and learn it for himself. He uses that as a core part of his message. And so he spreads it through his music. He's the type of guy who will, you know, read up on a real scholarly journal that's, you know, tough reading, mm-hmm. and then take that core content and implement it into some of his songs. If it's not in the songs, into some of the visuals for his videos, because he's also a filmmaker. He's a producer. He's a rapper. This guy's a renaissance man. He's an artist all over. Yep. And I've been a big supporter of him ever since I met him when I think I was about a freshman at Michigan State, and a friend of mine knew who he was, okay. and he made that he ended up making that introduction.
And then I'm sorry to cut you off, but one of the biggest things too, and when you're listening to the conversation, because in reality it's not an interview, it's just a conversation between two friends, you're gonna notice that it transitioned into much more of how do you do it all, man? You do everything. How do you do it? So as a fellow Latino and as a fellow entrepreneur, I identified on that, man, because I'm like, man, how do I do it? Sometimes I got, you know, work, and I have the podcast and other volunteer work and community work and my daughter and all that. So how do we deal with it? And when you hear the interview or the conversation, you're definitely going to get an insight of how an urban Latino or how an urban young man does it. Keeping so busy and deals with all the different hats that he has to put on. So that kind of sets us up to some more different conversations that we're going to be having in the future. And it also keeps it real, you know, nosotros somos la verdad. So it definitely keeps it real. It definitely keeps it to the truth. And we don't hold back on there. So I kind of wanted to also give him a big shout out. And the guy that we interviewed, you know, his name is Sacramento Knox. So Carlos, can you give everybody, all the listeners, where to find them at?
Yeah, Sacramento Knox. You could find him. Give me a quick second. I had to pull up.
While he looks that up too.
I got it right now.
Okay.
You can find them on sknoxx.com. So that's sknox.com. And you know, on that website, it'll link you to the social media.
Okay.
If you want to book him, which I suggest anyone here who has access to resources, or you know, you're into booking artists, check him out. Filmmaking. Music, if you just want beats and you're an artist yourself, you could reach him out. Everything you need would be through that website.
He does it all, man.
Yep. www.sknoxx.com.
Perfect. And also, familia, if you have a chance, rate us on iTunes, subscribe if you can. Just spread the word, man. We're just trying to get our the message out there. We're trying to get the truth. We're trying to get the vibe out there as well. So if you can, show us some love on laverdadltd.com or any of the social media outlets that you prefer, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're out there. Just love us, like us, subscribe, share us. Do what you got to do, man, because we want to spread the message out there as well.
Yep. Tell a friend to tell a friend.
So without further ado, you're going to be listening to today's episode, which highlights a lot of about Detroit, the native community as well, with Sacramento Knox.
And this won't be the last one. He doesn't know it yet, but we're going to meet up again real soon, at sometime before the year's over.
All for right. sure. Gracias, mi gente.
Yo, mi gente, what's up? We are live and direct from Detroit, Michigan. I'm here with a good friend of mine, Chris Yepes, a.k.a. Sacramento Knox, a.k.a. Knoxarelli the God. I heard your music, man. I heard your music. But, yo, it's a special episode. Like, normally, real talk, I try and set up some questions beforehand. I'll have a couple notes in front of me. But in this case, I didn't do any of that because I just know that we could have a good conversation. And so I'm not really worried about where the content's going to go because I know it's going to be a solid episode.
Cool.
Well, how you been, man?
I'm good.
Want to tell the people who you are?
Bonjour, I need to get you my intuition. Go there, Nene, Indigenous Cause. Because y'all want to get a dungeon about me. She can't do them. and that is the native language of this land that we are on right now. It's a stolen Anishinaabe land. Okay. It's colonized land right now. So right now I'm just uplifting that language. It's Anishinaabe Mohin. And it's just introducing myself, saying, you know, my name's Knox. I'm from the Southwest Detroit community, Turtle Clan. And, yeah, that's what it is. Just an introduction in that language.
Hey, that's what's up. And honestly, I've watched your growth over the years. The first time I met you was through a friend of mine, you know, Mike. I'm not going to say his last name, but I don't know if he wants his name out here. And the first thing he says, like, yo, because he knows I'm into hip hop a lot. And, you know, he knows I like rap just like him, you know, both Dominican, live in GR. We're at MSU. And the first thing he says, like, hey, you got to meet this guy. We were both freshmen. And that's how I met you. And then over then, whether we were talking like actively or in contact or not, I've always watched your project and I've respected because I watched the growth. And at one point I noticed that you were actively claiming that Native heritage, which real talk, I think is important. How did you come kind of into a deeper awareness of it, and what led you to actually promote that actively and have that be a part of what you just kind of do as part of your lived experience now in a much more active way, at least in what I saw from the outside when I first met you, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm. That has a lot to do with like decolonization, mm-hmm. and understanding that, after. So it's like, go to the university, we learn like this white supremacist culture, and in hopes to whether or not you're in the university to get education to make a better world, or you're in the university to get education so you can get on the come up and find a better place within society. So I think those two things differentiated for me when I was like, all right, I'm leaving Lansing. I'm going to go back to the hood, because I was back and forth. But I'm like, I'm going to go live back in the hood and actively do my work and give back to the community. I start learning about decolonization. So when all these things start happening, you know, you start to uncover truths, and it's like a whole process of like unlearning everything you learn to learn a whole new set of things. So like understanding colonialism and how people were formed from race, class, and gender, like all these things is like the act of trying to cover up our indigenous peoples and our voices and our souls. And there's like, you know, you uncover like their structures and their mm-hmm. systems, and there's still systems in place right now. Like look at Flint, look at Detroit. Like when you think about Indian removal back then, there's the same fucking tactics they're using in Detroit for like Indian removal, mm-hmm. shutting people's water off, displacing them, like all these things that can happen or are happening in Detroit that had happened in, back then too. It's like a continuous project. So like understanding this colonial project of the United States is like helped me reclaim those things, because you start to realize it's like, dang, I'm starting to like, you know, when you understand mm-hmm. white supremacy and patriarchy and capitalism and neoliberalism, all these isms and things, like you begin to discover like this hidden soul or this thing that's been suppressed and pushed to the bottom. So it's like when you discover those things, there's a lot of strength and power and healing and beauty inside indigeneity. So it's like uplifting those things through like all these filters. That was like, I thought that was pretty important, because, you know, it's like I came around it. Someone like, you know, get the old people to try to get the young kids to learn a new mm-hmm. thing. So I was like, I seen it before, but you know what I'm saying? That doesn't, is not. The way the colonial in the hood puts you in the first place, like you barely have time to like try to keep your family together, you know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. you know, depending on whether like they're struggling with like crack or heroin or alcoholism or poverty, violence, all these things, it's like they got to get those things first and then like go. So it's like I had to heal from a bunch of things to get to that root of that, and mm-hmm. then once we got to the root of that, then it started kind of, you know, rising up and cleaning and healing and all these different things helping from there. But it's really just a process of like unlearning, but learning from the unlearning. So mm-hmm. it was like, that's what was uncovering those things. And, you know, just, it's just like, I'm sure people feel that before, like, you know, they're like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, what is this missing piece? And then like, for me, that was like a missing piece mm-hmm. that was always there, will always be there, but it was hidden. I was self-suppressing it, and, you know, society, you know, suppresses it in the first place. So it's just like those things, like actively reclaiming those things.
It's important.
Yeah, so that's just a process from there. And just to see what it does is just like, you know, it's inspiring for other people. Because sometimes I don't see the residual effects of it. Maybe just like certain groups that I'm involved in. But like, you know, there's like residual people. So when I talk to a lot of people, like how you just brought that up, they're like, yo, I like really appreciate that. Because, you know, I be learning and I just like, it's like planting seeds. So it's like good that I'm like.
Knowledge itself.
Yep. Just helping like good. I'm just, you know, it feels good to like help like plant a garden of indigeneity. And then people can like, you know what I'm saying, begin to find their own in the process.
And it's true. There was a. Like, I'm Dominican, right? And the indigenous part of my heritage were the Taínos on the island. And a lot of people don't know. They would ask me, like, a lot of people who know me closely, they'll also call me cacique. And that was that's just the term for, like, a chief in that culture. And it was the name I chose when I became a part of my fraternity. And a big part of the reason is there was a website called cacique.org and where they would have studies showing you like, hey, they're not dead because in Dominican culture and Caribbean culture, there's this big myth that all the native people died out. Right. So it's part of that national narrative. And so it was a little piece for me, but that I didn't realize how powerful it was, because once I took on that name, it forced me to continue kind of just checking up on it a little while, like what are the studies saying, what are the communities saying, and I felt that over the years it's also helped me a lot, just kind of have a better understanding of my place in the world, kind of my personal history but also my family's history. And that's kind of what I noticed with you as well, but definitely you're doing it in a more visible platform. So you personally identify as a is it Anishinaabe? You know, I want you to correct me. And Chicano?
Yeah, Anishinaabe, Chicano.
What does Anishinaabe mean, just for the people who aren't too familiar?
So that's like the original language or the word. It means three groups of people. Yeah. So I'm sure people have heard of Chippewa, that language, but that is just a French term because they couldn't say Ojibwe.
Yeah.
So it's Ojibwe. I'm sure you heard of Ottawa. That's another word. That's another French term for the Odawa, and that's the original ones. Ojibwe, Odawa, and the last one is the Potawatomi or the Potawatomi. So those three people, they make up the three fires. They work together. They organize together, those three groups of people, and they form like the Anishinaabe people. And it's like that their Anishinaabes are like pretty much in Michigan and, you know, all around Michigan. So you get your Ojibwes and your Potawatomi and Odawa. And then you get some Iroquois and Oneidas, because that's where, you know, you start going east. Mohawks and things. So.
Yeah, it's a real rich history, and it's forgotten. You know, places like Michigan, we walk around and, you know, the communities today, depending where you're at, they might be primarily Black. They might be, you know, some Latino areas, and most of the state is white. But it's easy to forget that this was all Native land at one point. That there were original people living here, working here, and they've all kind of been displaced. So, I mean, like, real talk, just big ups to you and much props for that type of work, because whether you actively remember it or not, people who aren't aware with the term, just by watching one of your videos or just seeing your name anywhere, it'll spark that seed, right? And I think that's what's important. So anybody who has that knowledge or who has a little bit of awareness, They should claim it, I believe so. At least they should try to get more in touch with it, right? And in the long run, whether you realize it or not, it will help all our communities. You're also, you're a lot of things, bro. In the past, like, I used to think, oh, he's a producer. Then I saw a video, I was like, oh, shit, he's rapping too, and it's kind of hot. But what I've also noticed is that you're also a filmographer, right? So you're making dope video, dope visuals. Where did it all start for you? Where did that love for kind of just being a creative begin?
I think about that shit all the time. I think it's musically, I can't escape it, because I think when I first started playing the kazoo in kindergarten, I got cursed. Nah, just kidding. I was playing a Holy Redeemer. He probably knows what that's at. And it started from there, you know, like, being interested in like tools to create, or like, you know, like just to be able to see those things. So it's like, but the first moment I could understand music or what it was two direct ways. One way was like, it was already ready for you, and which was like a tape or something. or a CD if we had some, but we're, you know what I'm saying, we grew up in the 90s, so like getting hold of a CD player was, you know what I'm saying, like we're still on tapes. And then there's that way I recognize it, and then another way I recognize it is like you can make it. So it's like, you know, through rhythms, through sounds and all these things. So that for me is just like, I don't know, I just been always been like attracted to things that create other things, you know. So, but it's really started with the music. Like, you know, you start doing it. I'm sure like all these young hip hop kids that are rapping with their boys, they're like, oh shit, we about to blow up, and all these messages and things, right? When they, you know, write that first rhyme or record, they hear themselves over on the tape. But we would just record ourselves on the tape deck, and there's a microphone on it, you know, just eat hot Cheetos and eat Faygos and participate in the underground economy. And
that's how I know you're from Detroit. You just said Faygo.
Sorry.
I say Better Made Chips to the barbecue, but yeah, we were fucking with hot Cheetos. But I mean, just like from that point, you know, it's like you start doing it, and then, you know, it's like I'm all for it. So it's like you can see how the music is organized, just your boys right there and your people. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you know, getting together and do that and be like, oh, let's try the break in. Let's try this. So it was like seeing all these creative modes.
It's hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. And then we were doing it, and we didn't really recognize it as hip-hop. It was just like,
it's what
it was
you
just,
do.
Yeah, it's just like what you do mm-hmm. over here. And then because that was right when before YouTube came and all this shit. So it was like we had access to what we could get on the block. Mm-hmm. So when we got a break-in tape, we were like, oh, shit, that's dope. Now we study the moves from a tape, which would be like the modern-day YouTube.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
You go look at all the stuff and like study it.
We
and
used
then,
to record it off the radio.
Yep,
you
yep.
can listen back to it with your friends.
Yeah, wait for that song to come. It's like, all right, new song. Shit, the recording. So it was like that. But it was like musically just doing that. But like, you know, music is like a culture and a thing you create with other people. And that's why some people, you know, it's just a new thing too. Like, you know, sometimes I think rap is real egotistical because, you know, a single individual is just rapping about self-centered emotions.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's cool sometimes. But like a while ago, I figured out this we art. So I was like, you know, I'm making being a voice or platform for other people. So I should try to hear everything, listen to everything first, and then properly represent. So that's how it changed to now. But how I came to do all these things was like because of music, because, all right, you get your music done, and then we got to mix it. Mm-hmm. And then after you mix it, then you got to package it, and then you got to present it, you got to fill it. So it's like all these things.
It's a big learning curve.
Yeah, and then it's like hard. I'm trying to go on the next step, and then there's nobody there. I'm like, well, shit, I'll pick up a hammer and screwdriver and start doing it myself. And then that's how I was like, you know, I came into this world of autonomy and like self-determination by like creating those things that and doing those things where I couldn't have no help or have nobody access to, you know?
Yeah.
Because like you think about capital and stuff, like I approach somebody, then be like, man, I don't fuck with that shit. And I was like, whatever. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
They're like, we should do this, this and that, but like we got low equipment quality or something. So it's like, it's just all that stuff, like learning another route, alternative route from being like blocked or like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's how I really got into that and all these things.
And I think what you said is it's like mad important because oftentimes, you know, people from our neighborhoods, our communities, they're not going to have those resources. And we're super creative in how we're going to maximize what we do own or what we do have access to. And what I try and tell some of like the younger people I work with who, you know, who are into rap, hip hop, or just any type of creative process, it doesn't always got to be perfect, right? You're going to improve mm-hmm. through time. You just have, it just needs to be something you're proud of, and you're going to grow from that experience. If you grow up in the hood or if you grow up in any like urban community, I find it hard to meet people who haven't at least tried one time to write a 16, write some bars.
Yep.
Like I said it in the last episodes for those who heard it, but I tried that. I did it in Spanish. I did it in English. Dog, it was horrible. and after I noticed how what I thought was horrible, I shut it down. Never did it again. But sometimes I wonder, like, yo, what would have happened if I kept going on and it got a little better, right? Mm-hmm. I used to draw for a little while when I was younger, and it was kind of hot. But then I saw people who did it better, so I completely shut it down and I stopped. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you just said is real important because it shows people. It don't got to be perfect. It just got to be something that you're proud of and that you could build off of because you're going to keep growing it and you're going to become better at it, right? As long as you're doing it for the love of that project, it's going to work.
So with that said, how do you feel when you see that project come to life, right? It comes from an idea like, oh, this beat kind of sounds hot, or this would be a dope stuff to rap about. How do you feel when you actually, you know, you take it from visualization to actually come into fruition?
I think it depends on, like, the audience and community. So yeah. It's like, if, and it's always make sure I be accountable too, because, like, you know, like, what if I make some, like, I got a track that's talking about, like, Free Palestine, but yeah. Ain't nobody going to be shaking their ass in the club to that. So yeah, it's like, yeah. I have to find places to put pieces. So it's like kind of like an anticipation of, like, where the work help. So it's like, and I learned that from community organizing, is hearing what the voices and people need, or what different ways they act, or what would be the best way I can contribute. And that's usually through, like, the storytelling and the music and the film. So that particular piece is just like finding where it's utility, you know, finding where the best, where it's the musical's accountable to, you know, something. A lot of the music I've been making previously has been tools or utilities, mm-hmm. for classrooms, for organizations, for there's a lot of people that use my yeah. work in their curriculum, like on the university level and in the community and school level. So it's just kind of like making content for that. But mm-hmm. Right now I'm just trying to move towards a festival general feel. So it's a lot of like feeling good, but mm-hmm. it's again, like, a lot of the time it's like it's just like, you know, capturing the message, you know, like how we want to display it or put it inside with the community. But it's usually just that music is just mostly held accountable to, like, you know, the people that have been listening, have mm-hmm. been listening. And yeah, it's just finding new audiences to connect with. So right now I'm just trying to connect more back in with the hood. Like, they were all up on my stuff, but, like, you know, after a while they're just like, oh, that's not, he's mm-hmm. he's on his shit. That's my nigga. He gonna keep doing his thing and keep rolling. And just like, dang, because they, you know, used to show up to the block and they'd be like, yo, man, I had no idea what was going on with Palestine, bro. I those are motherfuckers. I didn't know they're doing all, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were getting educated off the music. Mm-hmm. So it feels good to come back and talk about that. And we talk about this instead of talking about, you know, how they, everyone's gonna survive in capitalism. So it's like, just talking about those things was cool, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I really appreciate it. But after a while, they're just like, I'm like, yo, you see my newest video? It's just shot in Mexico, mm-hmm. man, bro. It's like, damn, my first show in Mexico is an international show. And they're like, what? You had a video? So I'm like, dang. So right now, personally, I'm just like reconnecting with the Raza and different folks to create new music right now. So right now, I'm evolving as well, too. So
yeah, I the see music that. I will see be, that every video.
Mm-hmm. Like, this music that's coming out, we're working on. It's really interactive. It's story based. The crowd is really dependent on the crowd. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's going to take us through, take us through an experience. So mm-hmm. just working on that right now. But, I think I went on a tangent about what you was talking about.
But. No. But that's, I mean, hey, this Love or That podcast, that's what it's about. Whatever your truth is, you're just going to speak on it and, mm-hmm. and we're going to listen. We're going to learn together. You mentioned something that I also wanted to ask you about. So you say you had your first international show, mm-hmm. right? So can you tell us that background? How did it happen? How'd you even get the chance? You know, guy from Detroit, how'd you get connected with a big show in Mexico?
That was through a group called the Quilombo Arte, and through a cat.
I've heard of them.
Oh, Quilombo. Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. bet. So they were doing a 10th anniversary show, and we linked up in. There's a poet named Reyes. He was working with Quilombo Arte and also NALAC, which was like the National Association for Latino Arts and Culture. Mm-hmm. We're just supposed to produce some visuals and documentaries. So I was brought on board to produce for the documentary, to produce visuals, and to perform for the festival. So that was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a thing, like somebody
Mexico City.
Yeah, it was just okay. kind of a thing, like being like on the cusp of these like large artists that are doing the work, mm-hmm. and then. You know, like, they're like, okay, we need to reach out to somebody. And then my hand was out. So I was like, you know, I caught the ball and I, you know, we dunked on it. We did the alley-oop. So we did that show and then had another one in Canada. So last year was a good year. It was a lot of traveling, nice. Like really learning the music more, you know what I'm saying? Because a lot of time my music was just focused like movement building and the mm-hmm. movement work as far as like, you know, political campaigns and social movements. So this one was more of like the entertainment, like straight raw energy stuff. So those are really good. So Yeah, that's how it happened. Like collaborating with, you know, Mexicans that are, you know, on the other side of the border, and then Mexican Americans that are on the other side. So we wanted to bring those things together to, you know, build. And
had you had a chance to like visit Mexico before? Kind of.
I haven't. Just because I was like, I'm poor.
Yeah, not here.
So it's like, and even like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm like a few generations in. So like,
okay.
We are, you know, our families have been like slowly disconnecting from the motherland to like, you know, back up in here.
I feel like it's one of those hidden gems that you don't know unless you've been to Detroit, how old and how established the Mexican community is in the city. Mm-hmm. And I've always found it interesting. Because I live in Grand Rapids, which is about 2 hours away, and I was telling Jesus, he's in the room, what's up? one of my friends from Detroit yesterday, we were out eating in, it's called Mi Pueblo, right? Yep. A Mexican restaurant in Southwest Detroit. And I said, you know what? Just driving through this neighborhood, I see my current neighborhood in Grand Rapids, what it could become in like 30, 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, we'll have the small Mexican tire shop. But over here, I see it's like, it looks like a two-story building. That was pretty large, right? Yeah. So I see everything in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. but what it could be in like 30 or 40 years, you know, and that's kind of what happens with community. So if you haven't been to Detroit, make sure you stop by the Southwest, you know, plug some money into the community. Mm-hmm. We don't support gentrification. We're not about that in Love or That podcast. but yeah, no, I mean, that's real dope. You know, another thing I was curious about when it comes to you is you just spoke a little while ago about how, you know, a lot of your music has a good message, Palestine, and you know, empowering or reclaiming that indigenous culture. But you also said, now I'm trying to make some of that feel-good music. So as an artist, how do you try and balance the two, right? Reaching out to the people versus teaching and informing them, right? Because it's important to do both to an extent because you still got to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, it's just like what I was saying earlier, kind of utility. So it's like those songs were made pretty much for the community and by the community, you know. Because I was talking about earlier, like, you know, music is, especially as one's doing it by themselves, it's like really self-centered emotional music. So I'm conflicted with that because, you know, we talk about the we aspect versus me and all these things. So it's like, why should I share some of my personal shit inside this music? But I had a lot of friends and they're like, you should just tell them, you should just like, you know, like be raw with it and be mm-hmm. real and say these things. Cause you know, it's like, I work with all types of communities and sometimes I feel like they know some of my background and the growth, you know what I'm saying? Being like the super poor kid and all the situations. And then finally, you know, you see, you know, this poor kid be a rich man, meaning rich in principles and values mm-hmm. and community. And to have, you know what I'm saying? These things are just like, it just thinks like it's always been good for me, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's what the music is, to capture this stuff, is to go more personal, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? See where it was before, because like I have a group of consultants and people just kind of help me, like mm-hmm. when I start shifting out, yeah, like mentors, okay. get out of my lane or in, like stuff like that. And they were just like, yo, you should really... you know, maybe it's time for you. You got to do it. You know, it's up to you. We'll see how the times move. But they're like, you know, share more personal, your history of Southwest Detroit and what's happening, and uplift those voices. And, you know what I'm saying? Say it from your perspective in a different way that's like more feeling of it. Meaning like it's just like, for me, it's like I call it the stank face and the head nod. So like right when you play the music and you're like, oh shit, like, this is my stuff, like, going off of that and creating it. But I feel like because of the messaging sometimes and how people are really colonized, and if they're not understand they're colonized, these things I say is, like, against colonialism. So mm-hmm. sometimes people defend it on all types of levels that they're not aware of because mm-hmm. it's, you know, everyone talks about the Matrix and things. Like, to me, the Matrix is just colonialism. Like, it's a very crafted, systematic thing and project that's still in place. And it's always upheld. Like, you know, a colonialism can't be done until, like, you know, the native land is restored. And, mm-hmm. like, you know what I'm saying? Reparations are gave to, you know, to our people from the African diaspora. Like, all kinds of things that are in place. So it's like, doing this music. It's happening in, you know, our educator and activist circles and our social justice crews. They get those music, but right now I need to touch back in with, you know what I'm saying, the people that are way, way, way on the bottom.
We gotta get the back people to the
that,
hood.
Yeah, back to the hood, and you know what I'm saying? And we're in there, but like I feel like it's more like, you know what I'm saying, like just making the content relatable again, you know what I'm saying? Like without I'm not trying to promote, like, you know what I'm saying, like the capitalistic drug culture, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But then again, I know people got to eat and shit like that, and then I'm not trying to be like, you know what I'm saying, like participating in like dogging the women out, you know what I'm saying? So it's like there's these certain platforms, so it's like if there's systems and structures, like I see it all the time in the music, people trying to make this certain set of style, and it's just because the music is being like basically entrenched in competitive capitalism, you know what I'm saying? So they're trying to find ways to like deal with competitive capitalism and fit inside of it, rather than like, you know, what is this music doing for humanity? So that's why I'm like conflicted right now. It's like, is this music for humanity, or is it just for my pleasure, my personal pleasure? So it's like I'm conflicted with that right now. But we're making good music right now, so all I can say is like when Southwest Detroit comes out in the fall, I hope that, you know, everyone enjoys it. And it's my first studio album, like first legit studio album. Like, dope. I haven't produced, I've always produced singles and little mixtape demos and things like that, but this is the first official, like, pool, meaning, like, there's, you know, all the paperwork, and everybody who's in the music mm-hmm. business and stuff, they know what I'm talking about, like, just the preparation for release and stuff right now. So it's like, this is my first official one. Yeah, my first official one, and, yeah, going on tour in the fall in the Southwest and the East Coast, so then need to have a debut project for them communities, so. And like further teach them about Southwest Detroit, you know, because like Detroit's going through it right now. So it's like a narrative, like a counter narrative of like the white supremacist culture of Detroit. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, when you know when you spoke about, you know, that matrix being colonialism, a big piece of that is white supremacy.
Yeah,
right. And what you also when you said the words, you know, some people don't want to hear that shit.
Yeah.
The truth is that white supremacy is at a level where you don't need white people to uphold it, mm-hmm. right? So you get black, brown, people from all cultures.
Right. Like the Matrix when they turn into the
angels. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're thinking that truth, and that's kind of what they're promoting. And so when you work with, you know, work with the people, you got to have that understanding. Because what I notice is a lot of times people from our community especially, they'll go to college, they'll read a book, and then they start thinking they're better than the people who are their peers.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than trying to teach them and work with them, they start judging and say, you know what, I'm gonna stay away from all this.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about you is that you got all that knowledge, but you said, I'm gonna go right back to this community and I'm gonna help build it back up. And I think that's what we need more of.
Yeah.
So when you're like what you said earlier, learning all these things, it's a process, and then trying to implement it in your life. What are some of the ways you try and stay up to date or kind of continue to learn all these things that'll benefit you and then maybe your community too?
Yeah, I mean, I think always what I do, I always think like how many people I can benefit for or try to help more people place them, you know, whether it's like, you know, like, homie, you can sleep on my couch until you can find, you know, get back up on your feet, or, you know, if you're having a hard time, people will come to my crib. So it's like, because I've been in the community centers, but like now, like, I'm more independent, like working on different, like entrepreneurship type endeavors. So like my house still looks kind of like a community center. I still got the kids I've been working with, in the community. I mean, they're grown now. They're not grown. They're like over 18 grown, but
yeah.
But you know, just like having that space is like always like, what can I do for them? You know, like my immediate circle of people, mm-hmm. and then my community circle of people. So like doing like that, when, you know, we talk about the revolution starts at home, it's like, okay, I'm good to go. Now who's good around me and who's good further around them? So it's like, you know, like the whole concept of like, you know, moving from your block to your neighborhood, to your city, to the state, into the national. So I do move on those layers. So I move on the first layers, like my, okay, my heart's still beating, my feet's still there, you know, like uh-huh. head's clear. Okay, boom. Now I can provide for this work. So it's always like, you know, managing self-care and then well, I could plug into other people yeah, because sometimes I see motherfuckers burn out and then they're like, man, yeah. fuck this activism shit. And, you know, like, all right, whatever, yeah. you know what I'm saying? And like, And then they may come back, they may not come back, but it's just like, you know, having that self-care and understanding the revolution starts at home, and the your home is your body and your mind, your soul.
That's your temple.
And to, and to move forward from there and just keep it cool. And I remember when I was burning myself out, like going for other people, like, because I'm the type of person that will do so much for other people, and I'm just like, fuck my life. So it's like,
I'm the same way.
So they like, they had to call me out on this, like, yo, you just need to fucking chill and chill for a second. And I'm just like, well, people need me. I'm like, I feel fucking greedy and egotistical. And they're just like, chill with all that. Like, it's just like, what happens when you fly in a plane and like they have the gas mask on, right? And it comes down right in front of you. They're so, it's for yourself to put on. It's like, how are you supposed to help the baby or the kid next to you put their gas mask on if you don't got yours on? So that was like a nice metaphorical like vision for me. And that's just how I see things, you know? Just make sure whatever information and things I can do is like give it to other people and places.
What are some of the ways that you make sure that you're kind of taking care of yourself, making sure you're staying sane, you know, through all the madness?
Reading. I read a lot. I try to read. Been trying to read more books lately because I read a lot of like scholarly journals and things like that, like short reads. But I read, exercise, not like, I don't go to the gym too much. I just mostly shoot hoops. I just go like, you know what I'm saying, hit the court, do that for a minute. And, you know, I just got a PS4, you know what I'm saying? Like, I try not to be like all materialistic and all these things. But like, I mean, it's fun, you know what I'm saying? Like, I like media, I create media. So it's like a media toy for me. And it's fun, you know, like I could get really raged out and feel like whooping ass. But, you know, I rather like pretend to be, I'll be Batman and whoop ass on the game or some shit. Yeah. And like, you know, those are just small ways to, or write, create. I think my biggest self-care is, which this is like a double thing, is like I make music and create. Because I know if I don't create, I get sick. And I get sick either like, I'm like, man, I don't want to do shit, or like just sleep, or like those small things. So I know that's like a self healing thing for me to create. Yeah. So I was like, I usually like when times get tough, more shit gets made. So it's kind of like cool, you know, it's kind of cool. Yeah. But
you know what what I kind of came into contact with back like in September, I started meditating. And that made a big difference for me. You know, I finished my master's last semester. So I was taking three classes while working. I got a daughter, I got a wife. So I was like super busy and it was just, life was just stress. And one of the hardest things, but one of the most beneficial things that I think we can all learn to do, is just to shut up, sit quiet, and relax. Because when you're on the go all the time, when you're worrying about your problems all the time, it's just going to make your life more hectic. And I learned that through meditation, I forced myself to, you know, center myself and become a little more sane, because it was just real hectic. I haven't been keeping up with it the last 2 months actually, but for a while I was trying to do it at least 3 times a week. I found a little place where I could meditate in the hood. It's literally like a martial arts place, and they did some Zen meditation. So I was like, okay, let me just sit down, because I knew if I was alone, I wasn't going to do it. And it's hard, but it's something I recommend all of you. If you can, you don't got to call it meditation. I know some people are religious and they kind of get shy away from those things. If they say, hey, that's, you know, that's Buddhism, that's something else. All it really is just sit down, count your breaths, relax. Don't think of nothing else. And you'll be surprised by how much that kind of gives you an energy charge, by how much that reinvigorates you inside and gets you ready for the day.
Low-key, I'm about to share this. Because I don't think about meditate. I was like, I add that part of my performances now. Yeah. Like, I do, like, this whole breathing thing. Like, this breathe box that comes up on the screen. Like, I tell everybody we could breathe, like, breathe. But it's part of my performance. But it's also because I get really nervous. And sometimes, like, my mind's everywhere. So it's like, oh, shit, this bar, I forgot what I was saying on that bar. Or, like, all these things. Like, you know, if you add up all your bars for a performance, if you're doing, like, a 30-minute set, like, we were talking about 16s earlier. So it's like, what's 16 times, like, 25. Yeah. That's a lot of bars you gotta remember. So it's like getting nervous and those things, and nervous like people gonna like this shit. But I think when you're talking about, is that important? Because that's really, it's really important. So it's like that's what happens in the performances. We do this quick breathing exercise and we meditate together real quick, and I indigenize it too. like we do like four breaths for the four directions, and I let everyone know, like, you know, very politely. It's like, all right, you guys good? All right, don't forget, this is stolen native land you're on. And then we keep it moving. But that's cool you said that, because I was like thinking, I was like, damn, I should meditate more. But then I was like, I do. Right in the beginning, I was like, I tell everyone, close their eyes and like breathe real quick. And then I calm down a little bit, because it's so like tense because, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm an empathic person, so I'm like getting all this energy from the crowd and I don't know what to do with it. So that breathing and meditating, when we all focus together, is, I just realized, it's like, dang, that's pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah, you know who did that? I David Banner spoke at the I don't like explain where I work, but where I'll just say where I work. Mm-hmm. David Banner spoke there, and part of his lecture, his kind of he's releasing, like, it's called like the God Boxes album. Mm-hmm. But part of his thing was, you know, teaching you that, you know, that temple of God is within you, and so he said, you know, just shut your eyes and breathe. So he incorporated that. I caught it at the beginning just because I'm a little more in tune with what he was talking about. But towards the end, he kind of let them know, like, yeah, you know, when you're praying, at the end of the day, you're kind of just getting in tune with yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that's one interesting way to look at it.
Definitely.
So I'm glad to see you're doing the same thing.
Yeah. Because,
again, incorporating who you are, mm-hmm. you said that you, a little while ago, that you know, you'll read some of those journals that maybe our people in our community don't always check into. I like to do the same thing. And something as simple as meditation, it's something that's a part of our culture and our heritage also. That's mm-hmm. kind of, we've lost touch with over those, you know, last 500 years in the West. Depending where you're at, it could have been longer also. But it's important to kind of come back in tune with that, because, you know, when you get rid of your cell phone, get rid of the TV for a second, you got to face yourself. And for a lot of people, that's a hard thing to do. You know, we mm-hmm. deal with a lot of trauma. We deal with mm-hmm. a lot of challenges in our lives. And it's important to find a safe way to maybe face them, and then also, you know, get beyond that as well. Changing tunes for a second though, I also, something else important that sparked up a thought in my head mm-hmm. earlier, when we were talking about making sure that you're creating content that could benefit different parts of your audiences.
Mm-hmm.
You're an entrepreneur. That's a whole nother podcast by itself. Is, you know, rapping, doing creative stuff, making beats, is that your full-time thing right now, or are you still kind of working towards that?
Nope. I guess I'm a full-time professional musician and professional filmmaker. So
nice. See, I didn't want to put a title on it. I wanted to let you do that, so that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, because, like, I think, like, when a lot of entrepreneurs know, it's like, you wear all kinds of fucking hats. So it's like, damn, I'm the janitor for a second, and then, like, I'm the executive director and all these things, but... just many hats to play. But I also learned that from community organizing, like having no resources, and hip hop too, making something out of nothing. So,
okay, no, that's what's up. And have you came across a lot of struggles making that transition?
I think what I struggle with is like the capitalism part, you mm-hmm. know, and just being like, well, where do I price my shit at? Like, if I'm trying to, you know, somebody needs work. So, like, I do a lot of like free work for the grassroots mm-hmm. orgs. So it's like I provide support that way. So like, but it's an investment for me because I know the work they're doing. So it's like it's helping aid that work in different ways. But I think that's the struggle right now, is just to like where to find money. And then I guess the biggest struggle for me is like I'm okay. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm good. But again, that's the whole thing. It's like even when I go on my trips to these shows and stuff, like right here, like I'll be in a hotel or somewhere and I'm just looking out like, damn, I never thought hip hop would take it this far. But then I feel bad because I'm, like, the only one by myself enjoying this. Like, damn, I wish my homies could see this. I wish my mom could see this. So that's part of why I do the music, too, is, like, to show where I've been and things and report back, you know, report back.
And I, what you said is real, because I've heard other people say it, and I felt kind of the same way. It's what the people say, like, that imposter syndrome, where you're at a place and you're like, should I really be here? Like, when I first got that first full-time job, like, I had a dress shirt on and a tie. I remember just looking down, it's like, I seem way out of place right now. This isn't where I should be. And then you some people start feeling a little bit of guilt. Mm-hmm. But what you did is important. You didn't let it stop there, and you continued and said, well, I'm going to use this feeling, and I'm going to give right back to the community and show them that, hey, look, there is a way, or here is something that I'm learning and that y'all can benefit from too. Mm-hmm. And so, again... props to you.
Yeah. And I have like this organic apprenticeship program, you know, like the young homies that, you know, work within community center. Now we just do work, you know, we do work. And I like, I think that's a struggle too, is to make sure that they're good too, you know?
Yeah.
Cause the way I work is more like contractual based work. So it's like, you know, you get your mm-hmm. pockets of money here and there, and it's not like a steady paycheck like most people are used to. But it's, you know, it's like pockets of money, and it's just for them, like making sure they're okay. Mm-hmm. Like we do a job, but maybe the next job, like, I don't have in my budget, or I can squeeze it to make sure, but then everyone's getting like low amounts because of the dynamics of the situation. But other than that, I think it's going good. It's like, you know what I'm saying? We all got good mindsets. So it's like, you know, we've been learning to move about without money for like a few years now. So it's like, it's just extra boost when the money comes for like, as far as like, receiving capital returns, you know, cause a lot of the times, we get money, and it's just operating funds, like to keep the boat moving. So mm-hmm. right now it's just, you know, the struggle of like, you know, being a caring capitalist.
because
you know what I'm saying, like, but I think that's changing too, because, you know, if you have someone that's thinking these ways with the social justice aspect and perspective, that, you know, it's going to be important that they're not going to continue to do those destructive ways of capitalism, and then that, you know, we don't make capitalism and we just do cooperative economics, you know. So I think, I think that's the way to go, cooperative economics. We do work in that way, too, because not all of our exchanges are money, you know. So it may be like skills based, or maybe like a trip or like mm-hmm. food, you know, like the, like I recognize the work they do out there.
There's a lot of ways
to give back. Mm-hmm. So like I receive, and then when these young guys help work, put in work, like I'll be like, yo, come with me on tour real quick. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about a thing. You know what I'm saying? And then like, it's fun. It's like, damn, like they'd be out the hood. And it's just like, mm-hmm. I remember that feeling. You know what I'm saying?
So you have some mentors that helped you, and now you're just kind of returning that favor.
Oh yeah.
Right. We have a bunch of, you know, negative cycles in our communities, right? So things that keep being repeated that are bad, right? Drugs, relationships breaking up, school of prison pipeline. So there's a lot of negative things we deal with. But an active way to combat that is to build your own positive cycles, right? So you can create your own reality. And as long as you have that determined idea, create that vision, and you just work towards it. And so you're a big part of that. And around your city, there's actually a lot of that going on right now. There's a lot of interesting activism work, right, or among things like the water shutoffs that's been going on in the city. Are you connected to any of that, or are you got friends in? And so kind of, can you share a little bit about what's going on with that here?
Yeah, I'm deep-rooted. Like, my roles change within different organizations. Like, I do a lot of cultural work, so different orgs I'll be, you know, helping with flyers, T-shirts, speakers, even speaking at events, rallying people. So that's a lot of cultural work. Within organizing work, it, you know, it just depends what it is. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, door knocking and, you know, doing the basics of those things, talking to people, taking surveys, like organizing work. So it just depends on where we're at. And then also, like, because I think the emergency management and the way neoliberalism is working out in the state, that it's hard to move, you know. It's hard to move when people slowly start to realize like their vote doesn't actually count, and they know it, like that puts a psychological effect on people. So it's like, for us, like, we, you know, we just learned to not deal with the city, you know, at all, at some aspect.
That emergency management.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird because you get a lot of people that don't believe that all those folks are not connected together. You know what I'm saying? Like, that work together. Like, me and you, we're conspiring to work together. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We're all working the thing, so we get together and do our shit. But, like, you know what I'm saying? You got to remember that there are other forces out there and do it. And we'll, you know what I'm saying? Like, We'll be like, yeah, that's my boy, we do this and that. Yeah. But like, if we're doing some fucked up shady shit, we'll be like, mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that. And that's what's happening in Detroit. Yeah. You know, it's like, everyone's guilty of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, our mayor wrote himself in, and he's the mayor now. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like, all the psychological things, and you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, man, it's just so much like fucked up weirdness that it makes like new solutions possible. You know what I'm saying? Because people are so beat up and tired of dealing with the shit that they begin to make their own practices and new culture, new work, new media based organizing projects. Like, there's so many things emerge because of I mean, like, oppression, like, you know, being at the bottom and things like that. Yeah. But the work in Detroit, I'm involved in different ways. Most of my, I guess my majority of the work right now is narrative-based work. Okay. So it's like whatever white supremacy is going to say about Detroit or patriarchy or these systems of oppression say, we got to counter that. So it's like that's what's part of my work right now is like helping communities help them counter work too. Because, you know, you'll work on different things, then there'll be like the white large activist group that comes in and steals the work or co-ops the work. So there's different this is just different. I feel like I'm entrenched into just a bunch of movement work, but like I'm trying to figure out right now. There's like DNA, it's the Detroit Narrative Agency. I'm a part of them, which is like an advisory team getting money out to the neighborhood. So we assess which groups can have some bread and make sure that's accessible. And then like I help with a small youth collective that's small entrepreneurs, and they make cooperative economics design t-shirts, and I'm acting as a mentor with that in and out. Let's see, there's like DHCC, you know, volunteer with them, like Detroit Hispanic Development Corporation.
Okay.
Like there's a whole bunch.
There's going on, and there's a way for everyone to get involved somehow. So I mean, the stats don't show a lot, but it's growing. We have some listener base out of the Detroit area. So I mean, if you're from the city, if you're out here, you matter, right? There's a lot you can do. We don't have to wait on politicians. You don't have to wait on somebody else outside of our influence to make a change. And again, that's one of the biggest kind of takeaways I would have from this conversation we're having.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, I'm pissed off right now. I'm mad, and the reason I'm mad is because we got to end it. I got to check out of this hotel in like 10 minutes. But there's a lot we didn't get to, man. I wanted to talk about the situation over in Flint with the water. Wanted to talk about a little bit about how the state is took full control of the public school system in Detroit. So, I don't know, man. I think I might have to link up with you again down the line.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, that's a whole fucking another barrel of
words. We're going to need a part two. But just to wrap things up, fam, where can people find you? Just, you know, plug yourself, social media, any website. I want people to support Sacramento Knox. You know, he's doing something out of the love for the culture, out of the love for hip-hop, which, as you guys have heard a few times, it's just part of who I am. It's impacted my life tremendously. So whenever I see a positive artist who's on a mission, I always want to make sure we support. So where could they find you?
They can find me at sknoxx.com. And that's just sknoxx.com.
And through there, they'll find you on all the social media.
Yep, which, they'll find everything there.
I checked it. You don't follow me on Twitter, man. I was kind of hurt by that.
What, me?
Yeah, you.
What do you mean? I don't follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, you don't follow me. Okay. I followed you. Didn't follow me back.
No, my bad. No, this is my bad.
I'm messing with you. I don't really
care. For real. And this is a tip for the podcast, too, because like, I have this thing, this like logarithm inside my Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I follow people, but it'll unfollow people because it's based off like movements.
On if they're active or not.
Yeah, I mean, and that's my bad too, because I had a manager that was managing all my stuff like that, and then they never, like, they had to depart, so they didn't tell me how to fix that. So my bad if that happens, because people always say, you don't follow me. I was like, I did follow you. Yeah. My stuff unfollows people and follows people. So.
I was just joking, man. Here in Love Without Podcast, we don't get sensitive over things like that.
But it's important to stay connected.
All right, man, but thanks a lot. With that said, again, coming live and direct out of Detroit, it's been real. I love the city. I want to try and make it out here a little more. In a couple weeks, I'll be in Chicago. We got a couple other conversations coming up with friends and connections of ours.
Cool. But you know Kumba Links?
Cuban Links, you said?
Kumba Links.
I don't know.
I should connect you.
Connect me, man. If you have anybody who's interesting, the whole point is to just promote good conversations with that could impact the community. Really.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, you can find us La Verdad LTD one more time. LaVerdadLTD.com. It's the same, you know, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. La Verdad LTD. And that final thing: subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. We're trying to make a difference in this podcast game. All right, so y'all take care and peace.